CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 53, with Elizabeth Yu, president of the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery, and how she's making the ASCRS more inclusive. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. Liz Yu. You've seen her on the podium at every meeting. She's heavily involved in the future of ophthalmology and work with industry to give us new products and new technologies that are going to help us in the operating room. And she's even the president of the ASCRS. So Liz, welcome.
Hi, Uday. I am beyond honored that you even asked me to be a part of anything that you do. You are, you know, I've always looked up to you. You're a mentor. And so this is really a highlight of my, I don't know, my week, my month. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. So tell us about your path in ophthalmology, because you exploded onto the scene. How did you get into ophthalmology? And then how did you transition from, okay, you're done with your training, and now it's time to like lead our whole profession?
Oh, gosh. Well, we can say that I always knew since I was like aged four that I wanted to be a doctor. I always knew that I wanted to, like, you know, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to take care of people. But sure. I didn't think eyes, you know, I mean, I started, you know, something in the medical field, like a heart or bones or something, you know, something surgical. And I continued forth. In 2003, I graduated from medical school. And, but during my medical school experiences, I really thought that I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. I was very, very fortunate in my neurosurgery rotation. It was a phenomenal experience. I really, that was my number one neurosurgery. Surgical, like, you know how we get to pick like a surgical subspecialty to right. kind of rotate through. That was like my yeah. first experience. And let me tell you, I mean, you're a Q2 call. And like when you get to do all the LPs and you're taking call, you know, primary call, like in the, you know, neuro ICU, like you're in it and you're not sleeping, but you're loving it. And I absolutely, absolutely loved it. But the morbidity of the outcomes of recognizing like everything that we do microscopically, surgically, incredible, understanding the etiology and trying to even diagnose it, even right. before you can get to the surgical room, it was phenomenal. But then the final outcome, it's either, yes, they survive, but even like the medications that we could provide them and the rehab, it was so limiting. And sometimes it was, there is a true humanity to it of recognizing that the survival is the goal. And yes, people can have really positive outcomes, but you can't even prescribe them blood thinners because of their comorbid conditions of limited mobility and everything. That was really disheartening to see like what that looked like, especially for that medical student who doesn't actually see the 6 month and the 1 year outcomes, because we're not in clinic a lot, you know? And that to me was devastating, but I wanted to stay in like the neurosciences and I knew I wanted to stay surgical. And for me, it just was a great fit to say, okay, let me expand a bit. And my best friend, her name is Rebecca Bobo. She is actually an ophthalmologist in Florida. And she was my roommate as well. And she's like, you know, ophthalmology, so many similarities, but you know, there's a lot happier outcomes. Right. So that really helped shape a little bit of at least piquing my interest. And of course, it's one of those fields you don't know if you're ever going to be successful in until you go into it, because it's not like we actually get to do anything besides dropping the patients and doing kind of right. preliminary exams. But once you get into it, and you are fortunate enough to just get immersed into it, and if you do enjoy the surgeries and the surgeries enjoy you, then it just works out. And thus my life, I always say, began in Chicago, which is with my rush intern year through a surgical intern year through my residency. And I feel like there was a true rebirth. And sometimes for me, you know, between my faith, but I feel like the universe just aligned to open up. And that's where my life and my purpose began.
That's so true. I mean, I also had an interest in neurosurgery as a medical student, but yeah, the patients didn't exactly seem happy post-op. And so ophthalmology, I just happened to do like you. I happened to do an extra rotation. I had 3 weeks to kill. I'll do ophthalmology. And then I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
Yes.
Like switching gears kind of at the last moment to do ophthalmology instead.
Yes. And so, you know, so going into ophthalmology, so 2004, fast forward, so I had the best residency experience. I really did. It was a smaller program at Rush. So we had our own clinics, but then we also rotated through all the subspecialty clinics. So I had Kirk Pacco and John Rubenstein and Prag Majmudar and Randy Epstein and others. I apologize for anybody that I'm leaving out, but I had so many amazing mentors. I was able to do my fellowship with Doug Koch and others and sit on faculty at Cullen Eye Institute. Steve Flugfelder really shaped my ocular surface interests and understanding the etiology when dry eye and OSD was so little understood, you know? And even from 2004 to then, it was like such a shift in how I did my slit lamp exams, you know, in 08, you know, right. When I finished fellowship, and then understanding complex lens-based surgery, refractive cataract surgery, and how those two really are integrally related to be a successful cataract surgeon today. That was just, you know, we put the hours in, there's always that 10,000 hour rule, but there is also this kind of randomness and opportunity that all aligns to it too. And we recognize that, right? So 2008, so I guess I've been in practice, what, 15, 16, 17 years. So something
years like, go by.
Yeah, it goes by so fast. I'm like, so, you know, I say I've been doing this, you know, close to 20, meaning being in at least the kind of field, but I've been, you know, in practice 16 plus years. And between my mentors, getting me involved in ASCRS, being able to give back, because from the moment I entered through residency and my involvement into being able to give back and getting involved in research, presenting at AGS and ASCRS, I was never lucky enough to get an AAO paper or poster accepted during my residency. I just wasn't, I did finally, you know, in fellowship, but, you know, it just allows you to, you know, be involved, and you get to commit, and that philanthropy component, it just fills your soul more, and that soul food just feeds into like wanting to recognize that not only can you help patients at a kind of patient-facing one-to-one level, mm-hmm. but you learn early on that you can have this impact just like you've had, Uday, for so many years now, that it's like a an exponential level. And sure. I was nowhere near there then, but that you could. And if you keep working at an area that you're super focused on, you know, and you become an expert in that area with a heart of wanting to serve, that through that servant leadership and that kind of philanthropy kind of attitude, it really can kind of guide you. And like the best is when people from like, you know, Myanmar or somewhere just totally random are emailing you saying, you know, I don't have a biometer, or I don't have K values. And, you know, how am I supposed to care about less than 3 diopters of astigmatism? And you just realize like the differences and saying, wow, okay, well, let's think about just basic things of how we can, you know, get you in the ballpark, like axial mm-hmm. lengths and glasses and, you know, just things like that.
Sure.
But like, especially when they're asking about complex cataract surgery techniques, right? Like, okay, so I've got, you know, these small eyes and they're definitely dislocated. What would you say is the best technique, and what are my watch outs? You know, and so that just is really fulfilling.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a worldwide need for this type of knowledge, and to be able to contribute to the library of knowledge, I think is very, very important. So tell me about, you finished your training and then you joined faculty at Baylor, Cullen.
Yep.
But then that, what was that like, and why aren't you still there? Why wasn't it the right fit ultimately?
Sure. So during, by year 5 or 4, mm-hmm. I was very fortunate. I had a full practice, but the a full practice in academia is different from a full practice in private practice, just due to
efficiencies,
you know. So let's just, I mean, my full practice was not the same level of kind of patients. Like my full practice now is all new patients, right? Like in terms of getting surgical consults, et cetera. So it was a full practice, not as much staff to patient evaluation ratio. So it was a little bit challenging, but that was okay. But I did do a lot of residency education, and I finally was fortunate enough to have Gabriel, who was at the time. So after 4 years in practice, or year five. So year five, I had Gabriel that, well, while I was at Baylor. So Olivia, and I mean, it's okay, is an oops baby. So she, once I was postpartum number month 10, we found out that I was pregnant with Olivia. So in a span of, you know, it took a very long time to get pregnant with Gabriel. Very quickly, we came pregnant with Olivia. And I was working pretty much Monday through Saturday at noon. I didn't have admin time. That was just not what was built into my schedule, because I did take care of, like, I was at the county hospital, I was at the VA, I was at the main location. So I didn't have admin time. So it was just a full schedule. So it was just different in that, because of that. And then my husband was in private practice in general surgery, which, as you know, in certain fields like primary care surgery and primary care medical, they become, there's a lot of where private practice doesn't make as much sense. 96% of general surgery, general surgeons are actually hospitalists or surgicalists. So it's, there was a real switch in terms of, you know, how the practice of medicine actually changed over the last two decades, right? So my husband's looking at me now. I am, you know, my daughter came 6 weeks early, and I went back to work after 4 weeks part-time, and my son was 18 months. So no family help, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. And my husband's like, you know what? Let's think about in the next 3 to 5 years. This doesn't make sense, because private practice for general surgeons, I should be the one that's working within some form of an institution that needs me, because they need a general surgeon at all times for emergencies, et cetera. You, if you're going to work like this, need to consider an academic private practice, because if you're not going to slow down, this makes absolutely no sense. And we need family help. So he grew up, he was raised in Roanoke Rapids. It's a small city in North Carolina. His father is a wood technology PhD and was working. He had worked with a company, so was overseeing a wood factory plant for many, many decades. And so that was very close within the Mid-Atlantic and very close to where I live now, about 90 miles. So he was born in Richmond. He went to UNC for med school. So there were those ties. But I'm not going to lie. I said, I don't want to be in North Carolina per se, where it's so close that they're just down the road to any family. Like, I would like just a little separation, so that, you know, that just for everyone's sanity, but that they're close enough that we can all have grandparents, because there's nothing like grandparents' love. There really isn't. My own grandmother raised me, and I mean, that is pure unconditional love. You know that, right? And thus, I had called a very good friend who ended up being a headhunter within ophthalmology. And she's like, well, you know, I'll look, but there is actually an opportunity. I think it may not be available anymore, but I'll find out. And that was within Virginia Eye Consultants. And it was just like, listen, no, I'm talking 5 years down the road. I mean, this isn't anything like that I'm interested in, right? Long story short, word got around to them. And then, you know, so here we were. So thus, you know, we can fill in the blanks. I started, you know, in April. Like, so it fast forward like 6 months, and I was in Virginia, and so April 2013 is when we moved here, and now it's been over 10 years, which is, you know, and I just hit the ground running because, you know, it's one of those private practices where your effort equals the output. You know, they really believe in, you know, the doctor should do what the doctor can do. They provided the resources. They really had a strong community, but there was also a need for kind of that younger ophthalmologist who was also hungry, who already was already kind of, you know, I've been out, you know, 5.5 years, plus I had done a fellowship. So, you know, I was already at that point where I felt pretty comfortable, you know, so I could go out. So after clinics or mid clinics, and we had a great OD liaison, we still had do, Walt Whitley, who, you know, would give me a list of names. And we also have, you know, people who would say, okay, go and meet this person. Or if I got a referral that just ended up on my schedule, you'd be like, who is this? Let me make sure to meet and have lunch with them. So I became quite productive. That led to me fast tracking the partnership track. So instead of within 2 years, I became a full equity partner, you know, within 1 year. So that was very fortunate. And there were three equal partners at the time. So I bought in after 1 year, which was, it was a challenge too, because I came from academics. We had no savings. So, you know, you think about all those things, and then, but it was an incredible decision, because I knew this was going to be my future. You know, I knew I wanted to be a part of the decision-making process. VEC, or Virginia Eye Consultants, was already a larger practice. And there was a very well-developed research department. They were doing double-digit clinical trials at any time. John Shepherd and his predecessors, John had already been there 25 years, but he had already a well-established both anterior segment uveitis as well as retina clinical trials going on. And then there were some cataract trials, and we, you know, grew more of each with, you know, each coming provider, and it's been quite a journey. So it's been great.
Sounds great. Yeah, you bring a good point that sometimes it's tough to really hit the ground absolutely running when you're right out of your fellowship or your residency. But if you already finish your training and then you practice another 5 years, there is that next phase of the learning curve. Like there for cataract surgery, no matter how good you are, at case 500, you're lucky if you're halfway up the curve.
Right. Because you develop, that's like an ideal point where you start feeling, you feel pretty good when you go out of residency, like you're nervous, but you feel like, you know what? I feel okay. You know, you come out of fellowship like, okay, I feel pretty good. And then you walk into your first day of clinic with an actual group of patients, even if it's 5 or 10 patients, and then you start seeing some of the emergencies and you realize, oh my gosh, all my residency and fellowship actually did was show me, you know, what some of the weird cases are and what I should be doing. But holy moly, all I did was provide a good foundation. Now it's, now I'm the final say, right? And so that takes a little bit of time to be confident in your decision-making process. And fortunately, we do have mentors, you know, who we can always lean on. And then some of it is, you know, our mentality of, you know, who's more analytical versus who's more of a driver, and, you know, how quickly we can kind of filter those things out. And that's a little bit personality-based. And I've seen that amongst my associates of who's a little faster at that than others. But we all get there. And I think year five is a real, you know, turning point for a lot of clinicians, where they'll even be like, I've decided I don't want to do cataract surgery. You know, it's rare, but they even come to that point where we've worked with them, and they're like, you know, and they're not like a bad surgeon. It's just the nerves aren't worth it for me. I do more just doing clinic and MIGS and this or other. I don't need to suffer through the complex lenses or even do cataracts, you know? I mean, that's one end. But others, like, you just become more well-rounded, and just you're just in kind of more of the zone.
Yeah, for sure. For me, I don't mind if I never have to see another dry eye, blepharitis, OSD patient ever again. I would be very happy. lock me in the operating room 5 days a week. I'll be a happy man. So,
unfortunately, unless we are doing those things, the outcomes of those patients end up in our chairs.
For sure. It all goes hand in hand. Now, you probably also now have a much better work-life balance then, right?
It's funny. It's the more you give and the more you want to give, it does make it a little more challenging. Right now is probably the worst time to ask that question, simply because I am working and as president of ASCRS and like kind of the platforms of like the education, the advocacy, making sure that we're fighting for our patients, and all that goes. And yes, like truly the burden of it is on the ASCRS staff, of course. But there is, for example, like this is the 50th year anniversary. They're doing a bulk of a lot of the different initiatives. I am kind of leading the ASCRS Live. So we're doing 10 different regional programs and making sure that that's done properly, representing ASCRS at the different international programs. So there's a lot of different variables there. And just, so that takes time. And then, working right now, I do work as like a core or chief medical advisor for Tarsus. And so that is, that takes up a few days a week as well. So, I've learned to create time. So no matter what, though, I always am making, no matter what, my kids come first, because what am I doing this without? And family is like number one. That's the reason this like fire is there, of course, to one, set the right example, but two, if I fail at motherhood, then I failed at everything, honestly. And at the end of the day, I feel like my audience is, I have an audience of one, and I always say that, and that's to my God. But to please him, I feel like I have to be a representative of what a good, parent is, right? And I try to spend, I can't do dinners with them generally, right? Because just the timing doesn't work out. But I do try to at least, there's a time carved out in the evening. And doing some of the more remote work right now, cutting down on the clinical because of these other responsibilities, which I made that decision last year. More power to people who do that. There's a certain point, and everyone's point of when they decide to do that. I know doctors who did that very early on in their careers because they had children. I mean, this is both, men and women. I know doctors who do that later in their careers because they've, decided it's time to, take more time for myself. Whatever it is, more power to you. And there should be, and then people try to backtrack and try to explain themselves. Well, I'm going to go back up. No, whatever you do to make it work for you, amen. That's like that work-life balance or whatever. It's not a hoax, but there's always a reason for why you're choosing that path. Right. And it's either, you're taking care of other things that are very pertinent. And that is like, and there needs to be that if you don't refuel your own core to be that person to do everything for, whatever mission, purpose that you're serving others, family, whatever it is, your efforts, your goals, your company, or any other efforts that you may have, then it really will take a toll on your health, which is ultimately what we've all been there. We've all been there where it takes a toll on our, because when we run out of our own reserve, we get totally sick. We can't recover from a small illness. It causes our body to deteriorate. That really, and I've seen that happen personally and for others, So
it's tough when you wear many, many hats at once. I mean, first I want to congratulate you on Tarsus. Had a great earnings call. Wow, you guys are doing awesome. So you're obviously putting a lot of effort into that.
I've been working with them for 4 years now, since pre-commercialization, you know. So that buildup in terms of education and everything, it's been there. The team is incredible. The right. runway that they gave the Metafairs, and then myself as, you know, as an advisor within the, you know, the input and everything. There's a real synergy there, and it's really been, they have a wonderful leadership and a core culture that I think can be, it's exemplary, truly. I've seen, you know, same thing within clinics, clinical practices that have great cultures, and clinical practices that, you know, that you don't want to have. It's a little more malign, you know. Right. Same thing goes within our training programs. We can think of that within certain attendings or another's or other right. or peers that we may have seen, you know, or leadership styles. Well, the culture is really incredible, and everyone really, there's, when you're a small company, you're scrappy, you know, and you work really hard. And they were a much smaller company, obviously, you know. It's just more, it was still a smaller company. Now there's 250 people plus because of the sales force and everything. And but every single individual truly believes in a mission of being transformative, and you know, the pipeline is strong, and they work really diligently. It's, I admire everyone from the leadership down is really what makes a difference.
Yeah. How'd you get so involved and work with the industry? Because you have a huge disclosure list. So you obviously work with many, many companies. How'd you get so involved in that?
It started with, I honestly have to thank Steve Flugfelder for, there's a few very key people. So Steve Flugfelder, obviously, he taught me so much about OSD and really understanding and having a strong, keen interest in understanding dry eye as being kind of a bucket list of, yes, there are so many different factors that lead to the inflammation, but that can be surgical, it can be medical, it can be risk factors. But it's just kind of the thought process of how we take care of our patients. And back then, it was very, very limited. This was, you know, 2007, 10 years pre-Xiidra launch, right? This is really when we had one RX. And so it really helped to have an understanding of what else we can do, the omegas, and what we could do architecturally, and just really think thoughtfully, right? So that gave me an opportunity through Steve when he wasn't able to attend an ad board. And if they would ever ask him for a recommendation, he would, you know, mention my name. Well, that introduced me to work with to Allergan at the time, because they had Restasis, which was the only approved RX. And truly, it was introduced to Taryn Conway. And Taryn was like, she led, I think, marketing at the time for Restasis. And she was just a breath of fresh air, a true leader, and she was a driver. And she, what I really admire, you know, so much about Taryn is that she will fight for what she believes in. And I loved that about her, you know, but she also is a good listener, you know? So I loved those attributes and seeing that kind of strong leadership from a woman. There's not as many women mentors in ophthalmology, but, you know, mentorship can come in many flavors, you know? Right. So that was incredible. But the first person to ever greet me at that first ad board that I went to, and I was like, it wasn't like, see, like these days, it's so fortunate because like with social media and everything else and the different routes, like our younger thought leaders, they get exposure immediately. Like I was pregnant with Gabriel at my first ad board. So you can imagine, like, it's very different. That means I was like 4 or 5 years out, you know, like my recognition, and, you know, people, the rise, it's like a slow rise. Like I had already done, you know, I'd already published some a little, and, you know, it's just not the same. Yes, I'd done grand rounds and within academia, you know, I'd done some things, but definitely not really on the industry side per se. But I wasn't clamoring. I mean, I wanted to make sure that it was based on my competency. And if I was going to do any work, it was because it was my expertise in that area, if that makes sense.
Of course.
The person who greeted me with the warmest smile, because I was so nervous. I didn't know what an ad board meant, you know? And truly, I didn't realize that ad meant advisory. I was so confused as to what ad board meant, but I was going. Steve recommended me and I'm going. And it was Maza Martin. And Maza then come full circle when in 2019, when I met Bobby Azamian, Maza was one of the first five people to be hired at Tarsus. She had been out, so she was on the educational side at that point with their medical educational communications team. And she actually, so it was, I had not seen her in a very long time. You know, she worked with different companies, but it was somewhere with outside of ophthalmology. Okay. So I had not talked to Maza Martin in a very long time, but she held such a warm place because my anxiety level of feeling like imposter syndrome, which I still wake up every day with, okay, how do I not fail? You know?
You don't have imposter syndrome.
Seriously, all the time. But that feeling, she just, it like brought it down several notches, you know, because of Maza, you know? And so it's just so strange how the universe kind of brings things back, you know, that was so long ago, you know, that was 10 plus years ago. And it was just, I was like, you know, there's a meaning to this somehow, because that was one of my first experience. That was truly my first experience. I hadn't met Taryn yet at that point. Right. Maza was the first person I met in industry, truly. But Taryn really helped she led by example for me. And it was a very positive example. So that's how it got it.
So it's the people connection. So then you were with these people. It's a small world, basically, ophthalmology.
Right. So that's kind of how it happened. So I was more OSD. And then because of ASCRS, I got onto what was known as the YPR committee, which really had no panache, you know.
What's YPR?
Young Physicians and Residents. See? Oh, okay. You see, no one knows what that is. And then they, you know, through my work there, they're like, can you go ahead and chair the committee? So I chaired the committee and they're like, and I was like, let's go ahead and rebrand this. Let's go ahead and make it a microcosm and make it really full of what ASCRS is, except let's do things here that are all similar, but, you know, really focus on that young eye surgeon who's in training in the first 5 years out. So let's call it Young Eye Surgeons, or yes, like let's give it that brand, let's rebrand this. So that was under me, you know, a while ago, obviously 15, 14 years ago or 10 years ago, somewhere along those lines. So we rebranded it. We really made lots of efforts, made sure to get our corner in eye world, made sure we had our regional meetings. That was when we used to have the REACT meeting, which was the regional advanced cataract training meetings. We did several alongside Eric Donfeld in New York. We held several like Denver and San Francisco, and we slowed that down eventually to then start doing smaller meetings, but then COVID kind of happened and now we're revamping into these regional ones again, except now it's going to be open to everybody because it was so successful, even when we were kind of yes focused. And that kind of led to, hey, she actually has a specialty in kind of refractive cataract and complex lens base. That took notice. And being part of Virginia Eye Consultants also helped because I was doing clinical research and my knowledge base in optics, because I loved optics since I was trained with Doug. That union of those two mentors and my passion for those areas have really helped with my involvement in industry.
Awesome. And so then ASRS, it looks like you just kind of climbed the ladder, didn't want to roll to the next, and now you've climbed it up.
Yes. I mean, it's a lot of, you know, what that means is it's a lot of taking on a lot of, you know, meager opportunities, you know, like small and things that others are not saying yes to, you know, right. No pun intended or all puns intended with yes and young eye surgeons, but any like small, but then just making sure that, you know, that you do a really good job with it, you know, but if you are going to say yes to something, just make sure that you do a great job. You don't back down. You don't just, you know, say, oh, sorry, I decided against it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And that's the stickability, your accountability, and making sure you follow through and you do a really, you know, full intentional job that really is exactly what is asked of, right? If it's a 5-minute lecture, don't come in with 100 slides because you didn't really, you know, read the, right, you know, right, like the directions or something like that. You know, just make sure, especially if you're given main stage opportunity, finally, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. it starts with a lot of little things, but it ends up, and it, all of it is an honor, but you know, that kind of is where my name, I think, became more recognized. It was not necessarily that companies wanted to, you know, somehow that's how companies started recognizing my name. Maybe because I started doing more surgery and they saw, you know, my outcomes. I'm not really sure, but
sure.
Yeah. But, and then of course our mentors make those recommendations. So, I mean, I couldn't have, I truly owe, you know, honestly, the Eric Donenfeld, Ed Holland, Dick Lindstrom. I mean, those three are, I'm so fortunate to have, Terry Kim. I mean, Steve Lane, I'm not name dropping for the sake of name dropping. I mean, though they were huge, are huge leaders within ASCRS. I don't say were, but I mean, like, they shaped so much of ASCRS, and having worked with them, then they start to recommend you because they're the senior advisors and consultants and core, mm-hmm. you know, chief medical advisors, and prior CMOs and sitting on board seats and everything, you know? And while you don't know it, you know, behind the scenes, whenever the companies are saying, well, who should we invite to the table or invite to this advisory board?
Right.
And you don't know it because now I'm on the other side and they're asking me, who should we invite? And you realize it's who you see does the work, who you see you can rely on, you know,
follow through. Yeah.
Yeah, that follow through and that perseverance and the high quality work.
Yeah, but that's also the tough part. Like there's some, like you said, there's so many things going on. You have so many hats. You got the family hat. You've got your own personal life, your own personal health hat. You got to take care of yourself. You've
right.
got to practice.
As
you've
I'm drinking a monster, which is, right. I know, so bad.
But then to wear an additional hat, to be involved, like the amount of work you're going to do for ASCRS this year is tremendous. It's like, it's not a small commitment.
It's an ascension, you know, because, you know, it's on the executive board, but honestly, my part of it is small compared to what the staff, I mean, I really can't, the staff is not a big staff and it's shrunk by 20%. Steve Spears did an incredible job turning around ASCRS and they run lean and mean, and they really do. It's so much being done behind the scenes too. But one of my goals, as was all of our goals in the last 4 or 5 years, is we need to hit the refresh on making sure that the education and my platform really has been, and I think it's core to all of us, but it's, we have to meet surgeons wherever they are in their lives, in their professional lives, to give them the education that they need, right? And it can't always be at a live meeting. And if it's gonna be in a podcast form the way Nicole and I do it, then that's great, because that's a very different, you know, group or mindset. They wanna see that advanced surgical video, but some may want kind of essential core education, and we have to be able to provide that. We can't be known as, you know, just for the high volume anterior or cataract surgeon, you know? We have to provide everything for every cataract surgeon who wants to do, you know, who may wanna do compliment with MIGS or cornea or whatnot, but, and this isn't a plug, but the idea was that that's it. A lot of surgeons can't even come to the main meeting. You know, that volume has, it's just declining for every large meeting. And so the reason for the roadshow or ASCRS Live is because we know that we can have a greater impact by us going to 10 different cities all around the US. Like our first one just is going to start in March in Phoenix, but going to Phoenix and providing that refractive cataract surgery and MIGS. There's like three rotating ones, you know, between MIGS refractive and OSD, and the other ones are enduring live content on the website. But we have to meet doctors where they're at. Does that make sense? That's what we need to do in order to really serve our membership properly, besides the advocacy, which is what I realize is such another important arm of what we do, like especially with the goniotomy front and everything else that we've been, there's a lot that's been happening. And, you know, yes, we fought it on the payer level, but now it's, you know, we're going to be fighting and making sure that with the RUC committee and the reimbursement, that has to happen too. You know, so we have a great lobbyist and it's important. And low torics, we're trying to get that in too. So, that's a huge effort right now, and we've been working. So hopefully, and we're working hard on that. There's a few things that we may be able to do to get low torics, which in any group that it's going to be the most important is in that full range of vision kind of IOL, the diffractive IOL population of patients versus doing LRIs. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. I'm with you. The rest of the world has like the T2 toric. We just don't have it in the USA.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can't leave 0.75 sil or 0.5 sil in a diffractive IOL. That's going to, especially against the rule. I mean, we need to be able to fix all of that, you know?
It's good to have all that. So I like how you've got a lot of effort, outreach efforts then. So I didn't even know about the localized meetings, the 10 local meetings. I had no idea.
Every generation younger than baby boomers want their personal and professional lives to have some intersection. And that's what the market research shows. And I'm certainly not trying to be preachy at all, but I mean, we know that with the instantaneous level of access to education, like Cataract Coach, there's less and less need to go to live meetings, except for like the personal aspect. And of course the wet labs, you know, but to get quality kind of content, for example, like going to an annual meeting, yes, we can have, of course, we are going to, you know, implement things like potentially like babysitting during the day, or I don't want to call it babysitting, but allowing childcare during the day. Sure. But it still leaves mothers in a lurch at night, or parents in a lurch at night, right? So it doesn't really solve the answers all the way. So there's still going to be a limiting factor to attend. So that's why us going locally still makes sense, you know, especially for some CME, right? That's still 3 hours of CME. They're going to be able to level up their game by hearing a panel of really quality.
It's a single day event then?
Right. So it's just from like 6 to 9. Right. And it's 3 hours of CME. They can gain 2 more hours of really pertinent things that are going to take your cataract surgery game to another level. That was the whole idea. Right. So it's like, so refractive cataract surgery is the main course for every single one of them. And it's going to go through the pre-op, the selection, the different lenses, the post-op management. But then the 1 hour before is anything that can kind of supplement that cataract surgeon, right? Whether it's MIGS, a real focus on lid margin and OSD management. And then one, we did an update in refractive surgery, because even refractive surgery, as you know, is really changing, because between SMILE, LASIK, PRK, and really EVO, I mean, ICLs, that is really changing how the paradigm of how people are doing refractive surgery too. So just having a 1 hour session there, that's revolving, but that has already been done in webinars as well. And that's going to be live as soon as the first dinner goes live. So that first dinner goes live, the attendees can all gain 2 more hours of CME to see the other ones. So they can really get kind of a small mini course and a refresher, you know, which is a nice way of doing things, you know, and sorry about, I mean, this wasn't supposed to be a plug on that, but it's just, that's a great way to get to our members. And it's also open to non-ASCRS members. I mean, but it's the idea of being able to really serve our audience and meet them physically, you know, not just figuratively.
Well, I think it's important for the ASCRS to become more inclusive. So I think this is a good step in the right direction.
Well, you think so, Uday? We're trying.
from an outsider, I mean, I think it's a neat way of being more inclusive. And I think being more inclusive for ASCRS is probably a really important thing, especially, you know, a couple of years ago, they got rid of the election, right? In Washington, D.C., they had a vote to get rid of elections. So now it's like all internally nominated candidates for all leadership positions.
ASCRS was never election-based. I'm not sure about AAO, but ASCRS, at least now, is a nomination base.
Right, internal nominations.
So the nominations can come from anybody, but we have a formal committee now. So at least it's committee-based. So it's actually a little more open than it used to be, which is great. But it does, the nomination base also asks for those who are or have been involved in ASCRS. So it shows that there's been kind of a merit base to ASCRS service, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess population or attendance at the larger meetings is kind of dwindling. Like a lot of my local colleagues here in Los Angeles, I'm flying to Boston for the ASCRS.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to enjoy it, but it's a 6-hour flight from LA. So I know very, very few local colleagues who are actually going to go.
Yeah. On the flip side, our San Diego, similarly, you know, San Diego ends up being one where it's a lower bit of attendance, especially from like Europeans, because it's on the West Coast, but the attendance was way better than we expected. But similarly, the two larger meetings, both AAO and ASCRS, every year, they're just seeing less and less attendance for the exact reasons that we are discussing. Right. But the pre-meeting attendance at this point so far is looking really strong because the Europeans, for example, it's so much easier to get to Boston. So, you know, everything has its pluses and its minuses. But with the European side having a little more challenges with regulatory than it used to, there's a lot of innovation that is being discussed at ASCRS as well. So this is, you know, there's a lot of good things happening in the US, which is wonderful. That's really exciting to know that there's so much science and research and that, you know, regulatory is actually not the most challenging in the US in the world anymore. I mean, it's challenging, rightfully so, but not the most so.
No, I think I'm looking forward to my favorite part of any of these meetings is, of course, just connecting with friends, connecting in person. You're right. If I want to learn something, I could pick up my phone and I could have a high def video of kind of any procedure. If I want to learn a new MIGS technique, the videos are online already.
Right.
So seeing it in the audience of a lecture, it's just maybe not anything special because I can learn on my phone, but to have dinner with colleagues, to meet people, to make connections, I think that's kind of the human aspect of it's probably what it's all about.
Uday, yes, because we had dinner. I don't remember which meeting. Well, there's been a couple, but you look too young to have kids in college, and I learned much.
Both my kids have graduated college.
Okay, now they've got. Haven't they graduated? I just feel like we sat together at dinner. Maybe I was a little tipsy and not paying attention, but it's incredible. You look you look too young for that.
I'm 7 years older than you. So I finished my training in 2000, residency in 2000, med school in 96.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's incredible. Like, my kids are 13. I started a little, but you know, but the same idea. It's like you learn so much about on a personal level, right? I mean, that's the beauty of it. And it's, but you know, so networking means different things, but I just got to know you better because in no other way do, you know, our circles can't intersect from a physical standpoint because of where we live. It's because of just our friends and our work circles that allow us to like sit next to each other and across from each other at dinners and social events that just allow us to organically, you know, and you can't do that digitally, right? Like, I mean, I get to know, you know, Dr. Devgan, the amazing cataract surgeon and teacher, but I don't get to learn about Uday, you know?
If there's something special about breaking bread with someone, you know?
Right. So, yeah. So this, so to your point, there's nothing like live interaction.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the ASRS meeting. The committee was very kind, gave me a very primo 8 a.m. Saturday morning for my Best of Cataract Coach session. Yeah. So all my listeners and viewers, remember, 8 o'clock at the ASCRS, got a 90-minute cataract coach session. And I've got like two amazing panelists, Rosa Bragamili and DP Dhaliwal.
Oh, that's going to be phenomenal. I mean, they are such great cataract surgeons with such great pearls. So
yeah, and what I like about them both is that I like them, you know, on a personal level, we're such good friends that they are not afraid to, like, you know, poke and prod at me on the podium and say, no, you did it wrong. You should do this way instead.
Yeah, no, that's going to be so fun. Oh, no, they definitely, I love that about them, that they will, you know, friendly poke and prod, but I love that about their personalities. Like, they keep it real, you know?
Yeah, we have a great banter with them. So, yeah, it's a fun session. I'll show 9 cases in 90 minutes, so each is 10 minutes. And then each case will be like a minute or so of high-speed video, and then panel discussion, what do you do? Maybe audience input, and then here's another video of what I did, and here's how it turned out.
Oh, kind of so what day is this going to be?
It's a Saturday based series, 8 o'clock, and they gave me like an extra, like last year I had 600 people in the room, and there was like a line out the door. So this time they gave me the biggest room they got. So
Your session was phenomenal. I mean, it was so well attended. So, I mean, of course, and honestly, this is something that we don't have to keep hidden, but whenever I've served on a program planning committee, we always like receive like the speaker evaluation list of like what their speaker ratings are. You are absolutely always, you know, either 1-2 or 1-2 and 3. I mean, you're always like a top rated.
I'm competitive.
You're competitive with yourself.
Well, you know, the neat part is like, so because I have so many, I have more than 2,100 videos now.
It's amazing. So thank you for your service and the fact that you'd be willing to do 90 minutes and that you, I mean, it's great because it's such a, you know, everyone wants to be there. Everyone wants to see these pearls from like, you know, some things that are more core through the more advanced and hey, watch out for this. This is a sign, you know, this is the sign, you know? So it's
fun. It's a lot of fun. My internal cheat code is because I have all these videos up, I already know which videos are the most popular and get the most comments. And the so now I can make a best of with like the most popular, the most controversial videos. And then I do something else that's different. I gave up PowerPoint. So now my 90-minute session is a single MPEG video file that's 89 minutes long.
Oh, I love it.
Play, you don't touch anything and everything just goes automatically.
Oh, that's so good because you do a lot of just like where it's a video where like you're not going through because PowerPoint can be challenging in terms of video embedding and everything. And I've noticed that at the meetings, like it'll just be a very smooth video that you can kind of talk through and you know, so I love that you do that. But I mean, okay. So ASCRS Boston, okay, we're going to get people there Saturday, 8 a.m.
No, don't worry. I'll promote it on my channel in advance of the meeting.
Oh, so I'm sure. But I'm saying like, okay, anyone who's listening to this, now I'm keeping in my memory. I've got to tell myself. I'm gonna find a way to whatever I'm doing, clear up my 8 a.m. Right. And I'm there.
That'd be awesome. Well, I want to thank you for doing this podcast. I learned so much about you. I'm really proud of the work that you're doing in leading our industry. You're one of the best speakers on the podium for sure. Congratulations on being president of ASRS. I love the work you're doing. I like the idea of kind of being more inclusive and engaging with the doctors in their own hometowns. I think you're hooking it up. You are doing amazing things. You're shooting stars, just getting started.
Oh, you're really too kind. Just think, I'm just glad I got to spend time with you. And it's not all smoke and mirrors, but I mean, it's just, you know, it's like work is your hobby, right? And we love and we want to give back, right?
So we're a little bit, you know, crazy about this, a little bit too passionate sometimes.
Yeah. But it's fun. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a podcast every Sunday, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, wherever you find your podcasts, all available. Plus, we got our Cataract Coach video of the day every day. Again, more than 2,000 videos. There's a free PDF book about cataract surgery on cataractcoach.com and a free 25-part curriculum series. Check it out, and we will see you next time.